Thank you for joining us at the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Please note this podcast does not intend to offer medical advice or therapeutic treatment for any medical condition for either yourself or others. If you have any medical or rehabilitation concerns for yourself or your child, please contact your physician. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the OT Corner with Mrs. K., a school-based occupational therapist bringing you a series of interviews and information on childhood development for kids with all different abilities. So get ready, get set, let's go.
Hello and welcome back to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Well, today I have a very special guest. Her name is Erin Reynolds and she is an intervention specialist. Intervention specialists are teachers that hold a special certification and degree in intervention specialties. And actually, Erin holds a dual degree in early childhood intervention as well as in early childhood education. She is very passionate and loves to be an advocate for her children. She works with kindergartners, but she feels that it is her duty to give these students the tools, the education, equity, and well-being to be the best learner that they can be. Teaching and advocating has always come first and foremost in her life, and she is a wonderful person to talk to today because she's going to give us her point of view of what it's like to be an intervention specialist in the school systems. Please welcome the wonderful Erin Reynolds. Hi, Erin. Thank you so much for coming to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Glad to have you here today.
Of course. So glad to be here.
Now, Erin, you are an intervention specialist, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And what grades are you teaching?
I am a kindergarten intervention specialist this year.
Okay. And is this the only grade that you've taught? Have you taught other grades as an intervention?
No, I have taught other grades. I taught first grade my first 2 years, and then this is my third in kindergarten.
Okay. And then where did you end up? So how did you end up going into education?
So I honestly have always wanted to be a teacher. Ever since I was little, I remember playing with my Barbies and my dolls, playing school and playing teacher in that way. So I've always wanted to be one. I just didn't necessarily know that I was going to be getting into special ed until a little bit later in life.
And did you figure that out like when you were in college, or did you decide to specialize afterward?
So in high school, I went to a private high school and we all had to do volunteer experience in different areas. And there was a plethora of options. And I grew up in Chicago actually, and there was a company called Aspire, and it was a company that I volunteered with. And it was basically the premise of the company was to give support to parents of children with all varying special needs. So the parents would go to support groups or therapy sessions. There was like some sibling sessions that parents could bring their typically developing kids to. And I volunteered there as like a babysitting service. And I had my first experience with kids with special needs in that capacity. And I basically fell in love with it. And then ever since then, that's just what I wanted to do.
And where did you end up going to get your degree?
I went to University of Akron for my degree.
Now, did you come from Chicago to Akron?
I did, yes. I was looking at out-of-state schools. I was looking around the 6-hour mark. Akron and a few others in a few other states looked pretty appealing to me. I visited Akron's campus and it was just what felt the best and felt like home. So that's where I ended up.
It goes without saying that teachers are extremely special people. All teachers. They make impacts on our children's lives that last for lifetimes. But in this next section, we're going to go over two different types of teachers, the general education teacher and the intervention specialist, because there is a difference between the two. In this next section, Erin explains those differences to us and explains the different certifications and the educational background that you need to become an intervention specialist. So you're talking to us about a little bit that you ended up going into education initially, and then What is the, I there's, you know, we have the general education teacher, and as a related service, I'm an occupational service, a therapist, and, you know, I'm considered related services in the school systems, but there, you know, I work with mostly intervention specialists, but I also work with general ed teachers. What is the main difference between those two types of teachers?
So the main difference is, I would say the general education teacher is responsible for the core curriculum for a whole group setting, meaning a classroom of anywhere between, I would say, in most districts up to 24, maybe a little bit more if you're in a different type of area. And in that setting, you are teaching, you're creating lesson plans, classroom management, introducing and maintaining the expectations, and then documentation. And then the difference in my job as an intervention specialist, it's mainly a small group setting, depending on my caseload this year. For example, I have 6 students on my caseload. I do a lot more of the one-on-one or two-on-one pullout work. So I don't necessarily teach a whole classroom of 24 students the core curriculum. I think that would probably be the biggest difference between gen ed and special ed in the school setting.
And then are there different levels of intervention specialists? Are you certified for different levels of special education, or is it all just fall under one umbrella?
So the licensure changed right after I graduated. I was like the last class to have a separate license. So I'm actually licensed preschool to 3, grade 3 intervention and preschool to 3 general education. So I could teach both. So after I graduated, they kind of separated it out a little bit to be mild, mod to severe, cognitive delay, just to kind of like really honing in on those specialties. And I typically, so I kind of am in the big picture. I don't really have a specialty per se, but I typically lean towards mod to severe, more autism behavior, social kind of work than just the cognitive delay, learning delay types of kiddos.
And then for occupational therapy, we have to have so many continuing education hours per year. Is that the same for special ed? And is it different from the general ed teacher to the special ed teacher, like your requirements, I mean?
So the licensure going in, it does require an extra licensing test. So I took 4 coming into becoming a teacher, whereas I believe gen ed would typically just take 3. But again, the licensure is a little bit different since I graduated, so I'm not certain on that. And then as far as continuing education, it's the same as gen ed teacher. So I do have, after your first 4 year or your first 5 years in Ohio, you will start continuing education credits, and then you have a certain amount of time to get the credits to continue your licensure.
And then is it longer to go to school for to become a special ed teacher or an intervention specialist, or is it the same amount of, like, is it it's typical 4 years?
Yeah. So it's typically 4 years. I did 5 since I dual majored, because I did do 2 separate degree programs is the way that Akron was doing it at the time. Since I graduated, it's like all one license. So it kind of groups in gen ed with special ed. So I just did have that extra year to finish up the few credits I had, and then to student teach.
The individual education plan looks different for every kid that has needs. It just does. It's a specialized plan for that kid so that they can have access to their educational environment. And their day is going to look very different than a kiddo that is in the general education system. Erin explains what those differences are in our next segment and what it might look like in a typical day in her classroom. So now I not only am I an occupational therapist in the school systems, I actually have a daughter with a disability. And so I've gone through the process since she's been in preschool. Mm-hmm. And I understand, you understand what the difference is between the general education classroom and the special education classroom. Can you give us like an idea of what the difference looks like? And then also, what is a typical day for some of your kids look like schedule-wise? Are they in your classroom the whole day, or does it depend on the kid?
What is it? Definitely. Absolutely. So the gen ed classroom, so the way that my school district works, I technically don't have a class starting with me. So in the morning, I typically have like the duties for getting the kids into the building. And the gen ed teachers are in their classroom greeting the students. So once I come in from bus duty or parent pickup duty, whatever it might be, I'm right there greeting the kids along with the gen ed teachers I work with. From there, it depends, the schedule depends on the classroom teacher, the gen ed teacher. But I'm lucky enough to have worked with two teachers the last few years that really have a focus in that classroom community and that classroom family. So the morning pretty much looks the same every day. We always have a little bit of playtime before the day starts. And then there's morning meeting, specials, which include PE, music, library, art, technology is another, technically not a special, but we have access to, which is awesome. And then we have phonics, reading, writing, math, recess, lunch, and then guidance is also with our guidance counselor. So that's like the gist of what the gen ed teachers have throughout the day. You know, there's the reading block, writing block, math block. So that's kind of where I come in. A typical day for me really does vary every year based on the students and their IEP goals and their IEP needs. And their sensory needs. You know, it's a really long day, especially coming from, we do have an integrated preschool program in the district that I work in, but it's 2.5 hours, 4 days a week. And then, you know, the kids are in school full day, which ends up being a long day for them. So a typical day really does vary. I try to keep my schedule as similar as possible just for that consistency factor, because it is so important. But for me this year, I have students that I pull, like one-on-one for reading, writing, and math. And I have a rotation that I work through with my paraprofessionals that work with me as well. So the kids are not just saturated with working just with me, but they're, you know, having some challenge with some other staff as well, which really just pushes them to be the best students they can be and to give everyone a break, because dealing with behavior can sometimes be really frustrating. And, you know, keeping that in mind, the consistency is good, but also kind of leaving, giving some other people some responsibility within the classroom setting, because it's not only me that has to build the relationships, it's also the paraprofessionals I work with. So this year, I think the biggest thing has been utilizing the staff that I do have and, you know, using the rotations, using the staff, utilizing the curriculum that I'm provided by the district to supplement the core curriculum that the gen ed teachers are teaching as well.
And in your district, I know some districts don't do this, some districts do, but you guys have like a team teaching? Like, so are you teamed up with specific gen ed teachers, and are you considered, for example, like my one daughter, she was in a classroom, and then there was a classroom in between that was the special ed room, and then another, all three of them, they were like a teaching team.
Yeah. So,
is that how yours is set up?
Yeah. So in a perfect world, I'd love to totally co-teach, but just given the fact that I work with two gen ed teachers this year, you know, true co-teaching doesn't totally work because I'm in two classrooms. So my two gen ed classrooms are across from each other. And then my classroom is right next to one of the gen ed classrooms. So there are opportunities where the gen ed teacher and I do switch, and I'll teach, you know, a whole content area, which is really nice because I do have that dual license. And again, it just really depends on, you have to have that really core, strong relationship with the team that you're working with, because, and you also have to have someone that you're working with that's comfortable giving up their classroom, right? Because it's, you know, it has to be that team approach. And I think that the team I'm with this year, the last few years, we've really found that. And it's a really nice, smooth transition back and forth between myself and the other two teachers I work with, which is really hard to find because not everyone is willing and able. And it can be a tricky relationship to figure out, but I think we've done a really good job with that.
And I don't think that it depends too on the size of the district. You know, some districts are so small that they don't have that luxury of, you know, the co-teaching, and or there's just so many kids, just the opposite problem. But yeah, it is really nice. I always like that team approach. There's one school district that I work in that we do that team approach, and I always feel like that's such a more cohesive, like everything's a little more fluid. It's not so, you know, I do this part, you do that part. So it's really nice to have that.
Yeah. And I think coming from, or like, especially from our preschool, I had mentioned earlier that it's an integrated preschool program. So that looks a little different than like what the kindergarten and or school age setting looks like. Whereas in the preschool, it's an intervention specialist is the main teacher in a few of our classrooms. And then whereas in gen ed, it's the gen ed teacher, school age, it's the gen ed teacher that's the main teacher. And then I'm almost like a supplement teacher. So just making sure the parents understand that dynamic, because there is a misconception that myself is like, that I'm not licensed, that I'm not actually a teacher. And that's something that, you know, parents need to know. They need to understand that your child is really lucky, whether they're on an IEP or not. They do have two full-blown teachers to support them in, you know, whatever capacity is needed and is necessary. And that with me comes, depending on the year and my kids, like a few paraprofessionals. This year I have three. So again, we're really lucky in the district I work in. There's an immense amount of support across the board. And we have, you know, we have the opportunity to have the support in the classrooms. I feel like we've never felt like we're, you know, struggling or not having enough support for the kids that we do have in the classrooms, which we're really lucky and fortunate to have.
I love collaborating with the IEP team members, especially the intervention specialists, because they're the ones that are with the kid all the time. They know those kids very well. And I like to collaborate with them because I want to make sure what I'm doing as an occupational therapist is complementing the goals that they're working on as well in the classroom. This next session, Erin and I discuss what the kindergarten IEP might look like for kiddos and how she collaborates with some of the related services in the district that she works in. All right. So, you know, I work with a ton of intervention specialists, and I always like to try to collaborate as much as possible, which looks like either sharing a goal on the IEP or even just going into the classroom and treating, you know, pushing, we call it push-in. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that in your district do you collaborate with your related services, such as speech and OT, PT, vision therapy, all that?
Yeah. So the first two things I was going to mention were exactly what you mentioned. I have found that collaborating on goals with related service providers is a huge opportunity to overlap for a higher rate of proficiency in the particular areas that we're looking at. And also the like less chance of trying different techniques or strategies to get to a certain goal. And I also think just having the conversation with those service providers in my district, a lot of the time, and almost most of the time, the service providers already had most of my students in preschool. And if they didn't have them directly, they, you know, tested them in, or they had some kind of interaction. And I think my biggest thing is like work smarter, not harder. And if they already had a relationship and or experience with a student, that gives you a chance to kind of cancel out some of the strategies that didn't work or some of the routines that didn't work or some of the behavior plan pieces that didn't work and kind of move forward all on the same playing field. And also I think the biggest thing too, there's, if you, you know, think of a student on an IEP, there's probably so many different skills that everyone wants to work for, but if everyone's working for different skills for mastery, then it's going to take forever. So I think as much time as everyone can spend on honing in on those particular goals that everyone agrees upon, I feel like the transfer of skills is going to be a lot higher. And it just streamlines the IEP process to really hone in on those specific skills. You don't need or want an IEP that's, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 goals when you really want to focus on, you know, the here and now. And then as like, you know, the student progresses, then we can look at moving forward with some other goals. And it just, it makes it a true team approach. Like this year we've collaborated on goals. We have monthly meetings with the whole related service team, including myself, and our administrator, just to make sure everyone's on the same page. We're looking at the upcoming IEPs that are coming up. What's, you know, what are the skills that we're focusing in on for that upcoming IEP? And again, like you said, pushing in. I think it's a huge opportunity to co-treat. So this year I co-treat with one of my SLPs and my OT. And this is the third or fourth year we've done it. And it's so nice because it gives you a different approach to it's not just intervention teaching. It's, you know, the OT approach, what's best for, you know, sensory processing and self-regulation, and how does it work into the expressive and receptive language goals that these students have? So it kind of just brings everything full picture. And again, like when you talk to parents, you want to make sure that you're aware of everyone, like where everyone else is feeling. And, you know, that communication is just a huge piece and a huge benefit of collaborating with the related service providers.
I think too, you mentioned something about the goals. I've been on both sides of the fence and, you know, looking at IEPs and reading through the whole document, it can be super overwhelming for a parent. And
yeah,
I think paring it down and provide making it more concise for them.
Yeah.
For everybody. And not only that, you know, one of the first episodes that I did for this podcast was with a friend of mine from Philadelphia. He's actually in academia now. He runs a speech therapy program. They're doing a lot of teaching these days with their students about this collaborative approach. Like he gave the visualization of us who are like spokes on a wheel, each of our disciplines, and we're not coming at the kid and, you know, from each spoke, but we're just rotating around, like the wheel is spinning. It shouldn't be just like, you know what I mean? We should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a really good analogy. And I think too, with just like what you were saying, that team approach, everybody on the same page, the skills transfer so nicely with the kids. You know, because I only do, as a related service person, I only do one treatment session or two treatment sessions a week with the kid. In order for that to be carried over, it's nice to have, you know, what am I doing with the kid? What kind of techniques am I using? And for an intervention specialist to see that, or a teacher, gen ed teacher to see that. So,
I think that's really important. And I like that you added in how overwhelming it can be as a parent, because I think that's something that as a kindergarten intervention specialist, I see a lot more of, and I've realize that I don't want the parents to be overwhelmed. I try to get, you know, the IEP at least a week in advance so that, you know, the parent can ask questions and to really streamline the whole thing, because it is, in some of the parents, it's their first experience, or it's their first child. And you never want it to be in a document of all the things that they can't do, because that's not, you know, that's not accurate. And that's not what it's meant to be. It's meant to be a meeting about, you know, these are the things your child can do, but this is what we want them to do with some support. And I think that's really important too. Like, I think coming from a kindergarten perspective, I see so much more anxiety and angst going into the meetings than I did in first grade. And I feel like I've learned that, again, that relationship piece, even with the parents, is super important as well. Like, you want them to understand you and to know where you're coming from as a teacher, but also as like someone that's advocating for their child. I think that's something that I have really honed in on the most since I started teaching. Like, it's my biggest thing is what's best for the child, not necessarily about the curriculum or what's involved, you know, elsewhere. It's like that relationship piece first with the child and the parent is paramount compared to everything else, in my opinion.
Agreed. And we just had a meeting this like yesterday. It's so funny you brought up about the there is definitely a big difference between the parent that's just coming in on their first IEP or evaluation and, you know, somebody who's been around the block so many times they're in high school. And the mom said to me yesterday, you know, I always try to start off, like, I love how you said, you got to try to stay positive. It's not what they can't do. It's what are we working with? What do they have that we can help them succeed in school? Mm-hmm. I always start off with, you know, they have all these skills are what they have, and this is what we need to develop or improve. But she, I stopped and I said, so do you have any questions? And she stopped and she paused and she said, it's so hard to hear it from, she goes, I know this about my daughter. She goes, it's just so hard to hear it from other people. And
yeah.
And it just like, I kind of like broke my heart.
Sink. It's so hard because it's a hard conversation to have. And I think that's where that relationship piece is so important, right? Because they're hearing the hard things. And sometimes in my position, and if it's one of your, you know, a young child that you're working with, it's the same way. Like, it's one of the first times that they're hearing from a professional and that from their standpoint. And that's where I think that relationship piece is so important.
I agree. So do you, how often do you think in your special ed classroom, do you think you're working with, are your related services in there all the time? Or like, are they just in there on certain days, or how does that work for you? And do you collect some of their, like if you're collaborating, how do you collect your data together?
So we are not, the service providers are not with us all the time. So they have the, either the push-in, like you had mentioned in the classroom, or the pull-out minutes based on the child's IEP, which is a little bit different than our integrated preschool program. A lot of this is as much of the service they can do in the classroom is, I believe, what they try to do just because the time is so limited with the 2.5 hour day in preschool. So it depends on the day. A lot of the time, I have at least one service provider Monday through Thursday. Fridays in our district is like the preschool meeting day for all the service providers to kind of catch up on the paperwork and have their meetings. But Monday through Thursday, I would say I have at least one child in some kind of related service, whether that's working with my TVI, working with my PT, SLP, OT. And this year, and I've learned too with collaboration on goals and the collecting the data, some is a little bit easier than others. So for me particularly, I've collected and collaborated on goals with speech, but I think in a very black and white way. I think coming from an intervention perspective, just, you know, a lot of the time it's either they can or can't do it. And if they can't do it, how can we help them? Whereas with speech, I have a student that's nonverbal this year and uses a device. And I never want to say, no, he can't do it, because that's not accurate. So I've kind of learned as I've my very young 5 years of teaching so far that I'm a little bit stronger and a little more comfortable collaborating on certain goals rather than others. So speech, I'll work on the skills and I know the skills that are worked on, but I don't always collect data. With OT, I always collect data on. I think having that overlap, I just feel a little bit more comfortable. So I collaborate really well with our OT. We have two that work with our students in my district. And I think collaborating with them is huge because it's, you know, those self-care skills, those self-help skills, the self-reg, and the writing, which are all components that I work on daily with my students. And if I can give them support to overlap those skills, again, why wouldn't you? So the data collection for that is a lot of Google. We're a Google school, so we do our data collection through Google Forms, which has been awesome because it's a really easy way to collaborate on data, and it's a very easy way to share with parents to put into progress reports. So that's been something that we found works the best. I have worked with teachers and you know, other service providers that are paper pencil still, which I was when I started, and I've kind of moved to the technology side, but the technology is definitely a benefit for sure.
You know, I use Google Forms for a lot of stuff, but I never thought of using Google Forms for my collaborating. I never thought, because you can share the document.
Yeah. So typically what we do after we have an IEP, the service provider or myself will just create a new document. And we just copy it. And then that way we can have the same exact form, but different data, and I like it too, kind of going back to the other question about what does that look like? You know, if, like you had said, if you have only one or two sessions a week and you're working on this isolated skill, well, it's just that it's an isolated skill with, you know, one-on-one, two-on-one, whatever it might be. So then I take that same form and look for that transfer of skill in the gen ed setting or in a small group setting. And I think it's really interesting, especially this year, it's been interesting to see the difference in data collection and how their data is compared to what my data says. Because I have a student this year that is doing really, really well two-on-one, one-on-one with OT. And in the classroom, he's come leaps and bounds. But my data looks very different. So it's just really interesting to see it kind of unfold in real time.
I agree. It's one of my districts is a lot smaller, and we work closer with the intervention specialist. We can't, it's just, we have more time to do that. And she's the only one really. And in that grade level, but same thing, we can talk and we can compare notes, but we never, we don't have that Google form. That's so interesting. I like that idea. But her data does definitely look different because she might have a small group setting, whereas I'm just pulling out and collecting my data. So it's something to think about when we're working with our kiddos, the different contexts and what that looks like and how we can support them and really kind of analyzing that data and understanding how, you know, what that means.
Yeah. And I think something that's been so interesting, my student that's nonverbal, he can be a little bit of a stinker. He's like the cutest little guy, but he knows how to play the system. And there's a service provider that he works with that he just is not super fond of doing the work. So he just will kind of manipulate his way out of it. So when I went to look at the data for the progress report for the upcoming, we just rewrote his IEP recently. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my goodness, the data says he can't do X, Y, Z. And I asked the service provider, she's like, yeah, he literally will not do it. I'm like, that's so interesting because given, you know, a preferred something after, it's like done like that. It's done so fast. So even those little things. And so then I got to talking to the service provider and she's like, well, what can I do? You know, how can I make this make this data look better because he can do it. He's just not doing it at that time for her. And we figured out just some highly preferred items that he could work for to get directly after he did that task. And then, you know, the data shot up and he's doing so well with it. So it was an interesting conversation with that service provider. And it was also an interesting conversation with the parent at the IEP meeting because she had questioned it. And I said, listen, and like, he knows exactly what he's doing. He knows how to do these skills, but if he's not given the right motivation, he just will not. And she just laughed. She thought it was the funniest thing because again, it just shows these kids they're so capable. And I think that's another thing, like holding them holding all of our students to a higher standard. It's not just because they're on an IEP or they may be differently able doesn't mean that they have to have all these different things done for them. Like they can rise to the occasion. And I think that was a perfect example of that. And the mom was like, okay, now I know like he can do it and I need to hold him to that, you know, that accountability as well too. And it was just a funny little thing. It's like, wow, didn't think he was doing that to everyone, but he was pulling everyone's chain.
That's funny. Well, Erin, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your perspective. The whole reason I've been having all different disciplines come on is because I like to hear your perspective. It's interesting to see how different districts work together. And I think it brings up some really good ideas for providers out there, for intervention specialists out there. So I really appreciate you coming today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for the opportunity. It was wonderful talking with you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. Thanks, Erin, for joining me today. I actually love working at this podcast because it has really allowed me to meet some different practitioners out there and specialists and educators, and I get a really great sense of their perspective, where they're coming from, and it just has been very helpful for me as an occupational therapist. I think it's made me a better practitioner working with team members, understanding where they're coming from. And, you know, our common goal is to service those kiddos out there that need us in order to have them access their educational environment. So I really appreciate Erin coming on and sharing that with us today. I do have some general announcements I want to make. This summer, in Hudson, Ohio, I will be conducting a fine motor camp for 3 to 6 year old children. It is called Mrs. K's Fine Motor Power Hour. And I am including a link in the episode notes where you can click on. And if you live in Hudson or in the surrounding areas, feel free to sign up. Again, it's 3 to 6 year olds and there is limited space in each class. But feel free to check it out. I would love to have your kiddos join me. And that camp is going to be working on, you know, foundational fine motor skills that will help them when they return to school in the fall. Also, I want to let you know that I do have a website, theotcorner.com. You can check that out because, first of all, you can always sign up for my Friday freebies. If you sign up for my Friday freebies, you will get a Friday freebie every Friday. And then also, I have started a shop on there because I've been creating so many digital downloads for the Friday freebies and just for my own general practice that I feel I would love to share them with you. So I'm starting a little shop where you can go check that out. And if you'd like to purchase them, I would love that. Also, you can always follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, which I have a really good following on there. I would love to see your support. Again, thank you so much for listening. I so appreciate all the support out there. I've had some really positive feedback within the last week or so, and it just encourages me to keep going. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the OT Corner with Mrs. K. Feel free to join the OT Corner community by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. If you have a topic you want to hear about, or if you would like to come on the show, feel free to contact Jennifer at theotcorner.com. We would love to hear from you. All information from the show is listed in the episode notes. We know you can listen to anyone, so we appreciate you stopping by. Until next time, thanks again.